I thought I was just writing about Miami nightlife. Velvet ropes. Rooftop bars. The kind of men who whisper power instead of showing it. But what I walked into wasn't a party scene. It was a system. A system built to engineer desire, control identity, and turn women into reflections of a man's design. His name was Roman. And he didn't break women. He rewrote them. This is the story of how I was manipulated. How I lost my sense of self. And how I turned the game inside out. Because sometimes the most dangerous manipulator is the one who makes you fall in love with the version of yourself they created. This is Miami Vice, the manipulator behind the velvet rope. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. I thought this was just another fluff piece. A few paragraphs of sensory overload for a Miami lifestyle magazine. Sunsets, influencers, overpriced cocktails, and that artificial glow that filters can't quite fake. They sent me into profile South Beach nightlife culture. The new era of social status, they called it. But nobody warned me that status wasn't just something you posted about anymore. It was a weapon. And someone named Roman, was holding the blade. I landed in Miami on a Thursday. The kind of heat that makes your clothes cling like secrets. From the moment I stepped off the plane, I could feel it. The buzz. Not just the city's energy, but the pull. Like something was watching me before I even arrived. I checked into the Shoreline Hotel off Collins, mid-tier luxury, but with a rooftop that was supposedly Roman's playground. I was told the only way to get close was to play the part. No press pass. No notepad. Just heels, skin, and silence. The email came within an hour. Welcome to the game. Rooftop. Midnight. Don't ask for me, I'll find you. No name. But I knew. This was Roman. The rooftop was already alive when I got there. A kaleidoscope of bodies, heat, and bass. DJ spinning something ambient and strange. People floated from cabana to cabana like they had nowhere else to exist. Girls draped in neon silk. Men in overpriced minimalism, and phones held high like altars to their own reflections. Nobody looked at anyone, just through them. Like avatars. Like simulation pieces. And I was the anomaly. That's when I first saw him. He didn't smile. He didn't move fast. He simply was, standing under a column of soft red light near the bar, sipping something gold, dressed in all black. And he looked at me like he already knew my blood type. Like he'd already imagined the sound of my voice breaking. Roman. We didn't speak for the first 10 minutes. He watched me work the crowd, circling him like a shark without a scent. I was there to observe, record sensory data, maybe catch a few names to look up later. But my mind started racing. Because everything about him was calculated. From the way he laughed only when the music dipped, to the way people moved out of his path without a word. He was gravity. I was already bending. Finally, he walked up to me. No handshake. No introduction. You came alone, he said. I nodded. Good. That means you're not here to be seen. You're here to see. I tried to keep my voice flat. I'm here to write. He smiled, the kind of smile that peeled slowly like a warning. No, he said. You're here to learn. He offered me a drink. Something herbal and sharp, like it had secrets in it. And from that moment forward, I stopped being the journalist. I started becoming the subject. That night, I didn't go home. Not because of sex, not yet. But because I was afraid that if I left the party, the story would change without me. I stayed at the rooftop until dawn, silently watching Roman handpick people. Models, executives, influencers, and whisper things in their ears. I watched as one woman cried, then laughed 2 seconds later. Like he knew how to flip her emotions like a switch. Psychological manipulation. Emotional design. Seduction by suggestion. He was practicing dark psychology like it was an art form. And I wasn't just observing it anymore. I was inside it. By the time I got back to my hotel, my hands were trembling. Not from fear, not yet, but from awareness. Roman didn't want to be written about. He wanted to be witnessed. And I had just stepped behind the velvet rope. Straight into a world where influence was more dangerous than violence, and manipulation was the new currency. I turned on my recorder. Day one, I whispered. I've met the man behind the game. And I'm not sure I can trust anything, not even myself, from here on out. There's something about Roman that makes silence feel like a conversation. The next night, I got another text, no number again. Just, there's a table reserved. Come dress like you already belong. That was the game. Not asking to enter but pretending you'd never left. The club was called Rosa, hidden behind a fake storefront that sold surfboards. No one walked in, you were watched walking past. Then a man in a gray suit and no expression would step out and say, "Follow me." No ID. No security pat-down. Just eyes scanning you like facial recognition technology with a soul. And if you passed, velvet curtains would part into something that felt more like a temple than a nightclub. Roman. He sat at the center. Boys. The room was a living organism. DJ tucked behind a velvet wall. Pink lights like slow-moving lightning bugs. Models posed like mannequins but with eyes that flicked toward Roman with every subtle movement. He didn't speak. He signaled. A raised eyebrow. A nod. A hand turned over like a spell. And people obeyed. I wasn't there for pleasure. I was there for evidence. But as I slipped into the booth next to him, I could feel it, the slow slide of my objectivity peeling away. Tonight, he said, I'll teach you how value is made. What kind of value? Perception. Control. These are the currencies. Money just makes the lighting better. I wanted to challenge him. But every time I reached for words, his gaze tightened like a noose around my logic. He introduced me to Vanessa, a former actress turned hostess, barely 30, fluent in four languages, and currently in a year-long contract to be seen beside Roman at events. Nothing sexual, she insisted. Just curated positioning. Social engineering disguised as companionship. I'm not arm candy, she said. I'm a signal. I asked her signal for what? That he's untouchable. Back at the bar, Roman slid a phone in front of me. It had no apps, just a voice note player. Listen to this, he said. A girl's voice. Soft shaky. I know what he does, she whispered. But it feels good to be chosen. Pause. Even when I know it's not real. That's the truth no one will publish, Roman said, tapping the screen. Manipulation isn't about making people do things. It's about making them feel it was their idea. He leaned in so close I could smell the citrus oil on his skin. You think you're writing about me, but really, you're writing about you. My mind was racing. Every conversation in that club was like a layer of theater. No one said what they meant. They performed meaning. Girls laughed too loud. Men touched shoulders too long. And the phones? Always turned off. Because in Roman's world, power didn't need documentation. It needed privacy. That's how he kept control. That's how he played the long game. He didn't buy loyalty. He engineered it. By 2 a.m., Roman had sent home four girls, stopped the music twice, and banned a tech investor mid-conversation for violating ambience. I watched people react to him like gravity. Leaning in without realizing, smiling at his silence, performing to stay in his orbit. That's when I realized, Roman wasn't a man, he was a mirror. He made people see the version of themselves they wished the world would reflect. And when he pulled that mirror away, they crumbled. I left early. Told him I had an interview the next morning. He smiled without smiling and whispered, "You'll come back. You want the truth. And I'm the only one giving you anything close to it." And damn him, he was right. I walked back to my hotel through neon fog and the slow hum of heat, wondering how I could already feel compromised. I wasn't sleeping with him. I wasn't taking money. But his fingerprints were already on my perception. That's how manipulation works. It doesn't take your body first. It takes your narrative. And Roman was rewriting mine. One night at a time. By day three, I stopped pretending I was in control. I told myself it was just for the story, that I was collecting data, capturing interactions, decoding the mechanics of social manipulation in real time. But the truth was more dangerous than that. I was being studied too. Me, the journalist. The observer. The skeptic. I was now part of Roman's experiment. And he made damn sure I knew it. That night we weren't at Rosa. We were at a private estate in Coconut Grove. Modern, glass-heavy, the kind of house with no visible security because the threat was in the silence. Everyone inside had been handpicked. Women who looked sculpted by algorithms, men with eyes that didn't blink often, and enough designer labels to make a fashion editor pass out. No phones. No photos. No names. Roman called it the control group. Just people, patterns, and pressure. I watched him for hours. How he moved between clusters of guests, adjusting posture, volume, and eye contact like a social chameleon. He never asked questions, he planted them. Watched them grow behind your eyes. He would say something like, "Do you think attraction is a choice?" Then walk away. Minutes later, the person he asked would still be standing in place, trying to answer it to themselves. That's what Roman did. He created loops in your mind. Loops you couldn't close without him. Later, on the terrace, he brought me a drink and a question. "Why do you think people want to be chosen more than they want to be loved?" I tried to play coy. "Validation." "No," he said. "Because being chosen means there were options. And we all want to feel like someone picked us over someone else." Then he motioned toward the women inside. "They're not beautiful because of their features. They're beautiful because I decided they are. And they know it." I should have walked away right then. But I didn't. Because part of me wanted to understand how he did it. How he turned people into mirrors for his design. He called it the algorithm of desire. A custom-built theory of human attraction that blended psychology, neurolinguistic programming, body language, and emotional feedback loops. He showed me a black notebook filled with notes and formulas. Eye contact for 3.2 seconds increases perceived intimacy by 11%. Mirrored breathing triggers subconscious loyalty. Give validation, then withdraw for 72 hours equals obsession spike. He wasn't seducing people. He was programming them. Roman claimed he'd tested this on over 300 subjects, men and women, in curated environments like Rosa, the estate, yacht lounges, and influencer retreats. All under the guise of connection. But in truth, they were part of a psychological architecture of control. One girl, Imani, sat across from me on a plush velvet chair that night. Skin like bronze silk, eyes hollow. "I used to know who I was," she said. "Then Roman told me who I could be. And the version he showed me," she whispered, voice trembling, "she was so much better. I forgot the original." That line haunted me for days. Because I was starting to feel it too. Not that he was changing me. But that he was offering me a version of myself I couldn't unsee. Back at my hotel, I played back every recorded line from the night. His voice, his theories, his tactics. And then I looked at myself in the mirror. Not just physically, but emotionally. And I asked a question I hadn't dared to ask before. Am I here to report on Roman, or to be rebuilt by him? That's when I knew I wasn't just documenting a manipulator. I was caught in the algorithm too. And I wasn't sure where my choices ended and his inputs began. I didn't sleep that night. My body was tired, but my mind wouldn't stop racing. Every sentence Roman had whispered spun through my head like a riddle I couldn't solve. Every glance he gave me, every silence he let linger, it all started to feel like code. And I couldn't stop trying to crack it. I wasn't in control anymore. That terrified me. And God help me, part of me liked it. I spent the early morning pacing barefoot across the cold tile floor of my hotel suite, voice recorder in one hand, coffee in the other. I played back every interaction, every conversation, every manipulation, from the past 72 hours. It was all there. The tools and tactics, the social engineering, the psychological warfare dressed in silk and champagne. But the most dangerous part? There was no violence. There was no screaming. There was only suggestion and surrender. Consent wrapped in charisma. Compliance packaged as curiosity. Roman didn't make people do anything. He simply made them want to please him. At 7:13 a.m., I opened my notes to try and organize what I'd seen. Something for the article. But I couldn't focus. I had quotes, descriptions, even a rough outline. But I wasn't writing anymore. I was unraveling. My heart pounded even in stillness. My hands twitched. My narrative was corrupted and I knew it. Roman had introduced me to the concept of emotional suspension. The state of being where reality feels stretched like a dream you can't fully wake from. And now I was living inside it. I wasn't a journalist anymore. I was a variable inside Roman's experiment. Flashback. Two nights ago, Roman had brought me into a side room at Rosa, dimly lit, soundproofed, cold. There was no one else inside, just us and the hum of a subwoofer in the walls. He told me to sit. Then he handed me a small velvet box. Inside, a white bracelet. No brand. No charm. Just a loop. "What is it?" I asked. "Control," he said. "Put it on and they'll think you're mine. Which means they'll speak freely. But it's not for them. It's for you. Why me? I asked. He leaned in, eyes low. Because your mind's already racing. I'm just giving it a lane to follow. I wore the bracelet, and I let him win. Back in the hotel, I took it off. I wrapped it in a towel and threw it in the safe. Not because I was done with him, but because I needed to pause the influence. Like muting a song that had started to alter my heartbeat. I needed clarity. I needed myself back. But clarity doesn't come easy when you've been manipulated by someone who understands how you process identity. I realized then, Roman didn't seduce me with lies. He seduced me with versions of truth I already feared were real. That I could be better if someone else chose who I was. Later that night, I met with Vanessa, the hostess Roman had hired to be his social signal. She didn't wear the bracelet anymore either. He likes to make you think you're the exception, she said. But the truth is, we're all just echoes to him. We reflect back what he needs until he finds a better mirror. Then she said something that made my skin prickle. You think you're falling in love with him? No, I said too quickly. You're wrong, she smiled. You're falling in love with the version of you that you think he sees. And I couldn't deny it, because Roman made me feel smarter, braver, sexier. Like I was walking on glass and somehow never cutting my feet. And the more danger I felt, the more alive I became. That's when I knew what the real story was. Not Roman. Me. My reaction. My unraveling. My inability to walk away from the experiment I said I was only here to observe. I started this as a writer. But now I was the data. And my mind was still racing, faster than ever. I should have left the moment I heard the phrase body value. But by then, I'd already given too much of myself away, not physically, not yet, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I was deep inside the architecture of Roman's system. And the deeper I went, the more it stopped feeling like manipulation and started feeling like truth. Roman didn't break women, he appraised them. And once you knew your market value, in his world, you either rose, performed, or disappeared. The invitation came with no time to think. Yacht. Marina slip number 19. No makeup. No guests. Bring only a black dress. No sender name. But I didn't need one. Roman was setting the terms again. And I was still pretending I had a choice. The yacht was obscene, 75 feet, all glass rails and white leather. But this wasn't a party. It was something colder. A showcase. A performance for five investors Roman never introduced. I called them investors because they didn't drink, didn't flirt, didn't smile. They just watched. Watched us. Watched the women Roman had selected. Watched how we sat, how we crossed our legs, how we responded to silence. We weren't guests. We were data points in heels. The moment I stepped on board, I saw Imani, the woman who once told me Roman showed her a version of herself better than the original. But she looked blank now. Sculpted. Like something that used to breathe. She smiled, but her eyes didn't move. And when Roman put his hand on the small of her back, she didn't flinch. She froze. Like a command had been input. This is the new protocol, Roman whispered to me. Minimal emotion, maximum responsiveness. Desire is better when it's framed like calm. Later in the lower cabin, I found a tablet. Roman left it out, or maybe he wanted me to find it. A list of names, body types, social media stats, recent surgeries, estimated appeal cycles. He called it the rotation deck. Next to each name, one of three labels. Ready. Training. Retired. My name wasn't there. Not yet. But Imani's was. Status, retired. I froze. She was 26. Back on deck, one of the silent men finally spoke. He looked at Roman, then nodded toward Imani. That one. She doesn't spark anymore. You have a new face coming in? Roman didn't answer. He just looked at me. And smiled. It wasn't just chilling. It was confirmation. I was being groomed. Not just for access or information, but as part of the next set. Later, back at Roman's penthouse suite, I confronted him. What is this really? A brothel for billionaires. He laughed. Like a parent indulging a tantrum. Don't be vulgar, he said. This isn't about sex. It's about power optics. People pay for the illusion of control. Not just the body. That's where your mind still hasn't caught up. I pressed harder. You assign value to people based on perception. That's not optics. That's human trafficking dressed in lighting design. He didn't flinch. If I were a museum, he said calmly, I'd be praised for curation. But because I deal in people, I'm a villain? No, he whispered. I'm just honest about what the market already demands. That night I cried. Not because of what he said, but because part of me understood him. And that realization broke something in me. This wasn't just a story anymore. It was a test of my ethics, my empathy, my boundaries. And I was failing. I had become both observer and object. Both journalist and commodity. And somewhere in between, I had lost sight of where Roman's manipulation ended, and where mine began. By now I'd stopped trusting mirrors. Not because of vanity, but because my reflection had started lying to me. It smiled when I didn't. It moved slightly slower than I did, like it was waiting for Roman's approval before it showed me who I really was. That's what long-term psychological manipulation does. Fragments you. You become a host for two versions of yourself. The one you walked in with. And the one they built, layer by layer, suggestion by suggestion. And eventually you don't know who's narrating your story anymore. I reached out to a woman named Camille that Vanessa had whispered about. A former rotation deck subject who'd managed to get away. We met inside a private wellness studio, off the books, hidden behind a Cuban coffee shop in Little Havana. She had tight curls, a scar above her left eye, and the kind of voice that had learned how to keep secrets just to survive. She didn't offer me tea. She offered me a breakdown of Roman's entire psychological playbook. You're not crazy, she said first. You're being rewritten. Camille had been with Roman for 13 months. She wasn't sleeping with him, not exactly. He said that was never the contract. He uses emotional scaffolding, she explained. He builds just enough emotional validation around you that when he takes it away, you collapse inward and beg him to rebuild you. I wrote that down twice. Emotional scaffolding. Collapse inward. She went on. Fast. Like the truth had been pent up too long. Roman used behavioral psychology, NLP techniques, and sensory control. Subtle cues. Lavender in pillows. Same four chords in every background track, scripted lighting transitions, and controlled environments that made you crave his presence like a nicotine patch. It's not seduction, she said. It's environmental engineering. That night, I stood alone on my hotel balcony and watched the South Beach skyline blur through the salty wind. My body was still. But my mind was screaming. Not with fear, but with conflict. Because I realized I wasn't a passive participant anymore. I had started using Roman's tactics myself, without meaning to. I had mirrored his speech patterns in interviews. I had used pause-based persuasion in my own conversations. I had begun to feel more powerful the more detached I became. That was his greatest manipulation of all. Not teaching you to love him, but teaching you to become him. I went back through my notes that night and cross-checked Camille's insights against everything I had recorded, body language, dialogue patterns, even room setups. It all aligned. It wasn't seduction. It was a system. A refined, repeatable architecture of control. The music, the lighting, the verbal loops, the compliment, withdrawal cycles, the social hierarchies enforced not by rules, but by silence and gaze. Roman wasn't a party mogul. He was a behavioral engineer. And every woman in his orbit, myself included, was a blueprint in progress. That night, for the first time, I imagined leaking everything. Not just the article, but the audio, the playbook, the full shadowed truth. Roman wasn't breaking laws. He was manipulating within the boundaries of legality. And that made him untouchable. Plus, I changed the story from narration to exposure. But the question burned through my spine as I laid in bed, sleepless again. If I expose him, will I also be exposing the version of myself that I let him create? Because I was no longer the woman who walked into Miami with a recorder and a deadline. I was something else now. Stronger maybe. But also colder. And I wasn't sure I'd come out the other side whole. There's a moment right before you expose someone powerful where the world slows down. It's not fear. It's not adrenaline. It's the terrifying calm of no return. I had everything. Camille's testimony. Hours of covert recordings. The rotation deck screenshots. Even a partial video, Roman whispering instructions to Vanessa while motioning to a woman like she was a showroom piece. I wasn't just sitting on a story anymore. I was holding a matchbox in a room full of gasoline. And the question that kept spinning in my chest wasn't should I leak it? It was, what part of myself will burn with it? I checked into a new hotel under a different name. No more rooftop lounges. No more black dresses. Just jeans, a hoodie, and the kind of paranoia that makes you flinch when the phone vibrates. I couldn't go back to Roman's world. I couldn't warn Vanessa. I couldn't even talk to Camille again. She'd already vanished, a ghost in the wake of her own escape. So I did what I knew how to do. I built a file. I organized everything. Audio clips, metadata, timestamps, cross-referenced quotes with visual evidence, layered in keywords for traction. Shadowed truths. Social manipulation. Emotional engineering. Psychological warfare. I wasn't just telling a story. I was weaponizing it. The leak itself was clean. No social media. No clickbait. No branding. Just a carefully curated Dropbox folder routed through three encrypted relays, sent anonymously to 1 national investigative podcast, 2 feminist justice blogs, and a private Discord server used by survivors of high-control relationships. Within 3 hours, the audio had been reposted across 6 platforms. By morning, it was viral. Roman's name wasn't trending. Not yet. That was the genius of his system. He never left fingerprints. But the pattern was exposed. Dozens of women reached out to the anonymous inbox I'd set up. Stories of mentorship arrangements, image consulting, curated social partnerships. Each one with the same playbook. Control through perception, identity erosion, emotional scaffolding, and withdrawal-based reward systems. It wasn't a scandal. It was a sickness. One dressed in luxury. That night, I watched a video someone posted on TikTok. A slideshow of Roman's known locations with the text. We thought he was a genius. He was just good at making us feel replaceable. It had over 1 million views in 5 hours. I stared at the screen shaking. Because I'd done it. I'd ripped the velvet rope wide open. But I didn't feel victorious. I felt vacant. 2 hours later, I got a message. Blocked number. No caller ID. Just audio. You leaked the story. Roman's voice. Come. You wanted the truth. I gave it to you. You just didn't like what it said about you. I froze. He wasn't angry. He wasn't panicking. He was in control even now. Remember, he said softly. You didn't report this story. You became it. And just like that, I knew. This wasn't the ending. It was the pivot. Roman wouldn't vanish. He'd rebrand. Move cities. Change names. Recruit smarter. Clean up the edges. He wasn't a criminal. He was a behavioral trend. A pattern the system didn't know how to punish. But what he didn't count on. Me evolving to. The first time I told this story out loud was on a podcast I didn't think anyone listened to. Small studio. 2 mics. No lights. Just a woman with tired eyes and a voice that cracked when she asked. What made you stay so long? I paused. I thought I had an answer prepared. Something sharp. Intellectual. Something rooted in ethics or observation. But what came out was honest. Because I wanted to believe I was strong enough to resist him. And when I wasn't, I stayed to understand why. That episode hit 1.4 million plays in the first week. Not because I exposed Roman, but because I exposed myself. That's what people don't understand about manipulation. It's not a crime you witness. It's a mirror you step into. And by the time you realize the glass is warped, you've already learned to love your reflection. 4 weeks after the leak, I was followed. Not by men in suits or shady cars, but by whispers. People in the industry saying, "You made that up." Others messaging me in private. "Thank you." I thought I was the only one. I was called a liar, a hero, a narcissist, a survivor. Sometimes all in the same day. But nothing cut deeper than the silence from Roman himself. He never sued. Never responded publicly. Never even deleted the old photos of us, standing in dark corners of rooftop lounges, his hand ghosting the small of my back. It was like he wanted the ambiguity to speak louder than the truth. Let the public decide who was real. Let the doubt do the damage. That's what manipulators thrive on. Not denial, not confession, but uncertainty. And I refused to let him write the final page. So I wrote it myself. Every moment. Every tactic. Every fracture in my sense of self. I documented it not as revenge, but as a warning label. I turned my story into a workshop. I built frameworks for recognizing emotional scaffolding, compliance fatigue, mirroring tactics, validation withdrawal loops, and image-based gaslighting. And I titled it The One Thing That Still Makes My Stomach Tighten. The version he made me. It's now required reading in 2 gender studies programs. 3 former Rotation Deck women started foundations. Vanessa. She runs a trauma-informed nightlife safety course in NYC. We're all still healing. But we're awake now. Me. I don't go to rooftop parties anymore. I don't accept drinks from men who smile without blinking. And I don't flinch when someone asks if I've ever been manipulated. Because the answer is yes. And the real story isn't how it happened. It's how I found the tools to undo it. If you're listening to this, and your mind is racing, if your reflection feels like a stranger, if someone's silence feels louder than your own voice, you are not alone. You're not broken. And you're not stupid. You're in it. But the moment you name it, the moment you put light to the shadow, is the moment the rope rips open, and you walk through.